Hello again, and welcome back to AHA with Alistair. I'm Alistair Willis, Music Director of the South Bend Symphony Orchestra, and today we're discussing our second Jack M. Champagne Masterworks concert. It's a collaboration with our artistic partners, Shakespeare at Notre Dame, and joining me in the studio is their Executive Director, Scott Jackson.
Hello, Alistair.
Welcome, Scott.
Thank you.
Now, we've worked together before, haven't we?
Yeah, quite a few times, actually. I think in terms of collaborations with the symphony, I think this is our fifth one.
Fifth one? Goodness,
going back to 2012. I think we've done five in the last decade.
Yes, we did Anna Klein's Sound and Fury with you a few years ago, and we did a Peter and the Wolf with you and Christy.
We did a Peter and the Wolf.
And before that, you were working with Sung Ye?
Yeah, we did Romeo and Juliet in 2016, and we also did Henry V and perhaps a bit of the Midsummer back in 2012.
Wow. Too.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, we are about bringing our communities together. That's what the arts
Absolutely.
Is. And we do that at the South Bend Symphony Orchestra. We're collaborators, which is why you and I are talking here. But what sort of collaborations and community work are you doing with Shakespeare at Notre Dame?
Oh, well, that's kind of the heart and the foundation of what it is that we do. And we're known almost internationally, really, for as being a center for this nascent field of applied Shakespeare. So that's taking Shakespeare away from what we would traditionally think of, you know, audience and seats, watching Shakespeare on stage, and instead bringing Shakespeare into community circles. And me specifically, I've been helming a prison program at Westville Correctional Facility for the last 12 years, I think. So bringing that kind of engagement into the world of Shakespeare. That's the community engagement that I think is probably at the core of what it is I do.
And I've got to say, that is unbelievably inspiring. We are so lucky to have you and what you do in South Bend. I'm in awe of what you are doing and continue to do. And
thank you.
To have you here as our collaborators and to be working together again is just so magical. And of course, we had to do something to do with Shakespeare. There's a lot of music out there that's Shakespeare related, but we've come up with a program with just two composers, two plays, and how did we do that again?
Well, I think we were looking at all the options that were available to us, and we were looking for the connective tissue of how can we bring two pieces, because for time, we mm-hmm. were looking at performing two. How can we bring these together, and what might be the theme behind that? And I think we chose a little bit of magic and dreams.
We did Midsummer Night's Dream and The Tempest, and we're calling it Shakespeare's Dreams.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have music from the orchestra. And how many actors are you providing for us?
So we've got three actors that I'm very excited about. We have Marlon Burnley is slated to join us. He'll be playing Prospero and Oberon. I'm not going to give too much away about what characters each are playing, but Marlon is a South Bend native and now a professional actor and a professor at Kennesaw State University down in Georgia. And he's performed with us, I think, in four or five different seasons for the Notre Dame Shakespeare Festival. Secondly, we have Taylor, who just had her first season with us this last summer in Hamlet 50/50. She played Queen Gertrude.
She was great.
An amazing actor. Mm-hmm. So I'm very excited that we're bringing her back to town. And then lastly, and I'm most excited about Sarah Scanlon coming back into town. She's a Chicago-based actor, and folks might remember her as Ariel in The Tempest in 2016 and Puck in Midsummer Night's Dream in 2021.
Well,
so she'll be reprising those roles.
She's already ready for this.
Already off book, so to speak.
But hang on, you can't fool me. I know there are more than three characters in both plays.
Yes.
So how are you going to split this?
So we're going to be staging it in a way that these three actors can just transition from character to character. This is a very heavily edited version of each of these plays, right? And so we're not trying to necessarily tell the whole story of each of the plays. We're actually looking to engage more with the music. What text actually might have inspired these different movements that you'll be performing? And so as opposed to crowding the stage with 15 or 20 actors, we're just going to have three. And these three very talented actors have it in them to be able to just transition from character to character and moment to moment.
Well, we couldn't do this with just three musicians, so we're going to have about 75 there, which will be a bit of an imbalance, but I think for the big picture, it's going to be just right.
I think so.
We're actually taking this to the next level, if you will, with staging that you're doing and directing, semi-staged, but more than semi-staged, and we're going to have projection design as well by a Notre Dame alum, Camilla Tassie, who's worked with us before.
Yeah, I'm excited about that.
All these other dimensions that we're adding, it's going to be a unique experience we're offering. Let's have a look at both of the plays and the composers and the music in detail. Should we start with A Midsummer Night's Dream?
Absolutely.
Now, is this a comedy?
Yes.
It is. Tragic. I want to know how to describe it.
Yeah, this is probably Shakespeare's most well-known or beloved comedy, I think. I for me personally, it's a play that I've seen in the West End in London. It's a play that I've seen in regional stages across the country. It's the play that I've seen in gymnasiums with elementary school kids. I laugh every time.
Fantastic.
Yeah, I feel a bit, you know, I'm not embarrassed to say it, but when folks ask me what my favorite Shakespeare play is, I say King Lear, and they say, well, what's your favorite comedy? And I say Midsummer Night's Dream.
Oh,
it really is. I think it's close to a perfect play.
Oh, well, what a segue that is. What do we need to know about this perfect play if we've never heard of it before?
Well, it's all about a lover's quarrel, as you can imagine, and this person wanting to marry that person, and that person's father saying no, and so they run off to the woods to elope. And suddenly, you know, in the forest, we are introduced to this other world, this magical world of fairies, and that you have the fairy king and the fairy queen, Titania and Oberon, and they're up to all sorts of hijinks because there's some jealousy and a little friction in their relationship as well. So they start playing tricks on each other. And without giving too much away, there's some magic that happens that we'll see on stage. And at the very end, it all works out.
Everything you just said relates to Mendelssohn's overture to the Midsummer Night's Dream. Mendelssohn wrote this overture at the age of 17, which is just remarkable.
Astounding.
And 16 years later, he came back and he wrote the incidental music. And we're playing both in this concert for you. But this overture begins with four magical chords, as if to suspend our disbelief into the world of theater and what's about to happen. And the next music we hear is the music of the fairies scuttling around. No, do fairies scuttle? No, they fly, they fizz, they
zhuzh.
They zhuzh, why not? But this music that Mendelssohn has is just so perfectly descriptive. Let's listen to just the opening of the overture.
Okay.
Absolutely love that music. Probably the most famous music from A Midsummer Night's Dream is, it's the Wedding March.
Yeah.
And would you like to set up the Wedding March and then we'll hear a little bit of
Absolutely.
It?
Absolutely.
So who are you going to be?
Well, so this is happening toward the end of the play. As you can imagine, Shakespeare's comedies end with a marriage. And so we're exiting the forest and coming back into the court at Athens. And what we have is Theseus, who is the ruler of this of Athens, has brought these lovers together. Everyone's forgiven. The kingdom is back in harmony. And the very next day, he proclaims, we'll all be married, because he's marrying someone named Hippolyta at the same time, too. And in this version of the play that we'll be presenting, we then hear this wedding march.
Is this a triple wedding then? A quadruple wedding? How many people are getting married here?
Yeah, it is a triple wedding.
It's a triple wedding. Yeah. Wow. Well, let's set this up. Take it away, Theseus.
Go! Bid the huntsmen wake with them with their horns. Joy, gentle friends, and joy and fresh days of love accompany your hearts. Lovers and madmen have such seething brains, such shaping fantasies that apprehend more than cool reason ever comprehends. For in the temple by and by, with us, these couples shall eternally be knit. And, for the morning now is something worn, our purposed hunting shall be set aside. Away with us to Athens. Three and three will hold a feast in great solemnity.
Fantastic. Oh, well, great music, and thank you, Scott, for setting that up. Did you play that at your wedding?
I did not. I was married on a beach in Alaska, so no tech. How about you?
Oh, no, my wife and I, we eloped, so again, no tech.
Oh, I see. But I have to imagine, and I don't know if you have the answer to this question, it's got to be one of the most played pieces of classical music in existence.
I have to agree with you, but what is the most played? Could it be the Nutcracker, which is played how many times by ballet companies all over the world? What is the most performed piece of music in the world, Scott?
Let it be.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
A close second.
Fine.
Probably the wedding march. Okay, let's turn our attention to the second half of our concert production, which will feature The Tempest. I would have to think that probably The Tempest is not as well known as A Midsummer Night's Dream. Can you set this up for us? What do we need to know before we come to the concert about The Tempest?
Well, The Tempest is one of Shakespeare's later works, perhaps maybe his second to last play that he wrote. And it is, as Shakespeare's style progressed over the decades, it was pretty much strictly comedy, strictly tragedy, and then he began to experiment with a new form called a romance, which had elements of both tragedy and comedy.
Oh, it's both?
Yes, yes. So we start with very tragic elements. We have this Prospero, who's our lead character in The Tempest. He's been forcibly exiled from Milan, where he was the duke, by his brother's duplicitousness, right? So he's been exiled, not by choice, with his baby daughter, and spent 12 years on this island with no one to accompany him except a fairy named Ariel and a creature named Caliban, the original inhabitants of the island there. And so the play is all about a shipwreck and his brother, who had actually unseated him, is on a ship crossing the Mediterranean Sea, and Prospero conjures a huge storm, a tempest, if you will, that then wrecks the ship on the shores of this island. And then the action starts from there.
That is so helpful for me to even hear, and I know a little bit about The Tempest, because I'm relating that now to the music that we're going to perform that describes The Tempest is by the Finnish composer Sibelius, and Sibelius doesn't, his music doesn't tell the story, but he rather just outlines the themes, which is why we need the three actors to fill in the actual text of the story in between this more descriptive music.
Yeah, absolutely. It seems like you get these flashes of emotion in this music. And I believe the adaptation we're doing, it's something that I'm sure others have done before, but not notably, right? So we're taking different selections and then introducing text and character and then letting the music tell the story of that situation or that character.
So this music has been performed a lot, but I don't know anyone who's ever done this before as we're doing it, interspersing the movements in an order that we've created ourselves and having text to tell the story and lead our audience with a more clear path through this music and this play.
Yeah, I'm very much looking forward to how the actors engage with the orchestra in this
right.
You know, like as you said, 75 musicians on stage, not a lot of space for us to move and run around, but we do have a stage set plan that allows for actors to be popping in and out of the orchestra at different moments, almost like an additional instrument in the orchestra. So I'm looking forward to seeing how that's actually realized when we bring everything together.
Well, that's up to you. You're the director, aren't you?
I guess so. I better.
Well, let's hear a bit of the opening movement, which is called The Storm. The Tempest, it has to start with music that describes a storm, but this particular music is some of the most onomatopoetic music that I've ever heard. You can hear the wind, you can hear the ocean, the danger, the instruments overlap each other. We hear the water surges, the darkness, the dread. Let's just hear the opening of this movement. How dramatic is that?
It's beautiful.
Oh, it's frightening. I would hate to be caught in that storm, in that tempest.
Might be exciting.
But there's another moment musically, which if we can talk about and just hear a bit of, I would love. It's a bit later on, and it to me, the beginning shows the absolute power of Prospero, but it's followed by a contrast that is so great, a contrast of desolation, of loneliness, of sadness, with such amazing orchestral colors and magical sonorities. Let's hear a bit of that and perhaps a bit of Prospero's speech.
Oh, absolutely. Our revels now are ended. These, our actors, as I foretold you, were all spirits and are melted into air, into thin air. And like the baseless fabric of this vision, the cloud-capped towers, the gorgeous palaces, the solemn temples, the great globe itself, yea, all which it inherit, shall dissolve. And like this insubstantial pageant, faded, leave not a rack behind. We are such stuff as dreams are made on, and our little life is rounded with a sleep.
Thank you, Scott Jackson. Gosh, just like Mendelssohn's Midsummer Night's Dream, where we hear the fairies and the four magic chords come back at the very end. At the end of Sibelius' Tempest Suite, he ends with the storm. So we've come full circle in both of these plays. Mm. It's very, very bookended and very, very cool. This is just one of the most unique collaborations that I've ever been part of. Mm. We've got more surprises we're not going to tell you about. Spoiler
yes,
alert there. And what do we hope the audience comes away with?
It's a different engagement with Shakespeare, right? It's a different engagement with the symphony mm-hmm. as well. Bringing works that are hundreds of years old, especially in Shakespeare's case, bringing them to a modern audience and engaging with them in this interdisciplinary way, bringing a different resonance to the themes, to the words, to these characters. That's what makes Shakespeare live, I think, in this current moment. And every time we partner with the symphony, it's always a joy. So looking forward to this one as well.
Ditto with Shakespeare at Notre Dame. Thank you for chatting with me. We can't wait to see you all at our concert production on the 11th of November. And thanks for listening to Aha with Alistair and with Scott.